Awesome.
Okay, great.
Okay, then I think the only thing to do now is Will is going to go into my room and get Mickey.
Where's the frickin' dog?
Where's my fucking dog?
Where's the frickin' dog?
I thought it was right.
She's... Where is she?
Mickey.
She disappeared.
Mickey. She's under the couch. She was underneath the whole time.
She's gaslighting you.
Don't tell anybody what you saw. Okay.
I caught these two guys with 3 kilos of cocaine. What do you think they were doing with it? Making shots for girls' softball games. I caught these two guys with 3 kilos of cocaine. What do you think they were doing with it? Making shots for girls' softball games.
All right, so as I sort of said, my idea for the show is conspiracy theories and sort of an alternate history of America via conspiracy theories. And we want to, but closing up, we want to get to the hot one at the moment, which is of course is Pizzagate. We're having a pizza party right now.
We just enjoyed some delicious pepperoni pizza with shaved cheese.
You know me, Will Meniker. Sitting in this week, we've got Brendan.
Hey, guys.
Virgil.
Hi, everyone.
Matt.
Hello, I'm in the house. I'm in the trap house right now.
Felix, not with us, still on vacation, but special guest this week. This is a long time coming. We've got Jacob Bacharach in the trap. Jacob, what's up?
Hey, yeah, guys couldn't do it without a Jew, so they called me.
Jacob, you may know him from Twitter. He's on. He's at Jake Backpack. You may have seen his writing in the New Republic, The Intercept, and other fine outlets. He's America's finest pundit and novelist. Few people know this about you. You actually pen thrillers under the name Brad Thor.
That's true. Yeah, you've
become very successful.
It's why I'm doing podcasts.
I have to say that I'm really looking forward to Scott Horvath's next adventure.
I'm actually Lee Child. I'm the author of the Jack Reacher series.
No, we will talk about your novels in a little bit. Your novels, or as I like to call them, our collaborations.
Yeah, you are thanked in both of the acknowledgments, so I suppose that's reasonable.
Yeah, so we've been on the show. We've been talking a lot, too much probably, about electoral politics, snooze. We're talking about, the election and politicians and identity politics.
Hanging
like,
chads.
Yeah, shit like that. And I think it's distracting people from real politics, the real issues of the day, which is that...
Real reality.
That everything that we regard as politics or political disputes or global catastrophe is really... all just a proxy for the ancient war between the greys and reptiles being played out for supremacy of our planet and its human livestock. But, we were talking about conspiracy theories this week. And, Jacob, I wanted to have you on because you are something of a conspiracy theory expert. You're the author of several.
I am, yeah. I am the inventor of any number of entirely true conspiracy theories. I invented them for my fictional novels, which are not fictional. They are simply a mechanism to smuggle the true history of the United States, and in my case particularly, post-industrial Western Pennsylvania into the public consciousness without the censorship of the deep state or our reptilian overlords.
Well, how about we start with that conspiracy, right? With the reptiles, the reptile people. You make good use of it in your first novel, The Bend of the World. Like, can you describe for us the broad outlines and origins of the reptile people conspiracy?
Yeah, well, there are a whole lot of. It's really hard to tell where this actually began, but I don't mean to jump the gun, but it's fascinating because it actually does, in a way, tie in with some of the characters who ultimately. Went on online to help popularize the Pizzagate conspiracy. But the sort of basic premise of it is that at some point in time immemorial, a group of shape-shifting and bloodthirsty reptiloid aliens from the Draco constellation, or also possibly from inside of the hollow Earth, or also possibly from the dog star Sirius, depending on who you ask. I don't want to pass any judgments. This is
both,
still
hear both sides.
An important topic. Yeah, it's an important topic of academic consideration, and I really respect all viewpoints, I guess I would say. But the basic notion is that they came to Earth. They have enslaved humanity. They have engaged in various projects of selective breeding, whether to make us more delicious or somehow otherwise fit to be part of their overall plot. And the actual sort of upshot of this, the sort of general outcome is somewhat nebulous, but one of the most popular theories is that they came to Earth in order to mine monatomic gold, which is a substance that absolutely does exist and is capable of increasing the synaptic processes in your brain and giving you total control over time, space, and matter.
So it's the spice melange.
What is that in a chemistry sense? What, there's one atom? I took Latin.
Mono means one, and atom means atom.
Yeah, it's monatomic gold, man. What's the question? What are you saying? You don't believe in science?
I just wanted to tell people that I know Latin.
Well, all I want to know is how am I not getting in on any of this selective breeding? What the hell? I want to be selectively bred by a reptoid. I don't care. If they can watch, that's fine.
Yeah, I'm not selective at all.
Yeah, I mean,
it
stands in stark opposition to all this ball cell nonsense that you guys are trying to spread to the world. I mean, the truth of the matter is that they really want us to be fucking all the time.
That's why the only way to defeat them is to refuse.
No, but so like, who's the guy? Like the guy, like
David Icke,
right? The guy, this British guy, a former footballer,
David Icke.
Pronouncing names correctly on this show is very important to us. Okay, so
well, David Icke is a totally fascinating character. He was actually a professional footballer, soccer player in England, and then he went on to have a fairly mainstream sports broadcasting career. And then sometime, I guess it must have been in the 90s. He was having a variety of physical and health ailments that were related to his time and some injuries that he sustained as a professional footballer. So he ended up to go and see a psychic medium who told him
that he was
a part of God's plan to bring about sort of perfection of the human race, and that he was part of the Godhead. Again, a little bit nebulous what exactly that means or represents, but he wrote a book about it. He subsequently disavowed his own incarnation as a part of the Godhead, and proceeded to promulgate this theory that, in fact, all of that had been bogus, and that we were part of the third invasion of the reptiloids, which began around 7,000 years ago, and has subsequently gone on to promulgate this theory quite widely, particularly through the medium of the internet. His famous website is called Star Gods. I would encourage you to check it out. It's very, very important stuff there.
This would be like the equivalent in this country if like Terry Bradshaw got some alternative medicine therapy for his numerous concussions and then started a website about how like the Holocaust is fake or something like that.
I would be reasonably willing to bet that Terry Bradshaw thinks that the Holocaust is fake.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
The robot
allegedly.
Definitely doesn't. Has some questions about 6 million, if that's possible.
But like,
I mean, I will say that if you look at Terry Bradshaw, he does look, I mean, that bald head, he looks exactly like the caricature of a reptiloid. So, I'm just saying.
But another big facet of this is that like all world leaders are reptiles, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Almost all of the world leaders are reptiloids in some way. There are any number of animated GIFs in which, some bad over-recorded VHS of like a 1983 NBC Nightly News image of like the Queen of England briefly shows some sort of like a little bit of graininess, and that is taken to actually be revealing the scales underneath her human skin.
Or the eyes, and, like the eyes are yellow for a second.
Oh, yeah.
This was the photo. I made the video here. Hillary Clinton sick is coughing up death. But in all actuality, this woman has death in her, demonic spirits. And you can clearly see like the cat eye or reptilian eye right there. Yeah.
When I press pause on the VHS tape, the face moves back and forth.
Why is it always the queen who is like maybe the 900th most powerful person?
Lyndon LaRouche isn't into the reptoid thing, but he also thinks that the Queen of England is an incredibly important figure in like the world drug trade and stuff like that. And it's like she's an irrelevant old lady, but these guys all fixate on her.
The queen's worth like what? 5 billion quid?
She's
like
nothing.
The fucking Harry Potter.
It's a lot of bollocks, Mike. Yeah.
Well, so I'm going to. The Queen of England figures really prominently in a lot of these. I mean, part of it is because the Windsors are really an ancient Germanic family, the Saxe-Coburgs. And so that is taken to be the sort of symbol of this bloodline, which then gets traced back, you know, through all the sort of convoluted genealogy to the sort of like most ancient rulers of the earth. But there's a really great conspiracy book. It doesn't deal specifically with the reptiloid conspiracy, but it does deal with breeding, so it should be of interest to you gentlemen. And it is called it's called Thanks for the Memories. It's by a woman who goes by the pen name Bryce Taylor, and it is the history of her life as a CIA mind file computer and the satanic sex slave of Bob Hope and Henry Kissinger. and a big part of this conspiracy is that she is abducted to be somehow crossbred with both Ronald Reagan as well as the offspring of the Queen of England in order to produce a better CIA mind file sex slave computer.
What is a mind file computer, though?
It's like a Mentat?
It's like the cloud, man. I don't know. they're sort of like human computers. They are basically like, Lucy in that shitty Luc Besson movie. their minds are able to store information and then shuttle it back and forth between various
Or Mila Jovovich in the good Luc Besson movie.
Wait a minute, which one is that?
The Fifth Element.
Oh, yeah.
She's learning at an incredible rate.
The best in this Bryce Taylor book, Thanks for the Memories, there is a really great story, which in a lot of ways I think is really indicative of what's so wonderful about conspiracy narratives and the conspiracy mindset. And so the story is basically that Henry Kissinger, who's one of her two owners, takes her up in a hot air balloon, dresses up in a lobster costume, and rapes her. And then he tells her afterward, he's like, no one will ever believe you.
I read that in
– that's true.
I also read that in Robert Evans' book.
Was I in a hot air balloon? You bet your ass I was.
Was there a lobster costume? Baby, you better believe it.
That's why Henry is the best.
Jacob, I'm wondering, did you ever see – because you just mentioned films for a second. Did you ever see this like this mockumentary called The Brandon Corey Story? Or have you ever heard about it?
No.
It's not a real documentary, but it's brilliantly shot and edited to look like one of those like low grade British, like alternative news style documentaries.
On this edition of Truth Seeker TV, we will reveal what our investigation into this man's account unearthed, and what we found may shock you.
It's about this fictional guy named Brandon Corey, told by his friend who's like his voice is disguised,
digitally altered,
and it's about him infiltrating Bohemian Grove basically. But at the end, the big payoff is he gets in and he sees there's a grainy video of his hidden camera that shows Dick Cheney eating the bowels of some young virgin.
Because he blew the whistle?
Yes, because he blew the whistle. Because he came forward to tell us what he had seen. Vice President Dick Cheney turning from a human into an alien.
And it's very, very well done. And like, if you weren't totally sure, you'd think it was maybe real for the first 80%. But David Icke is in it.
Well, he could have been. They could have pulled one over.
Maybe
on
they
him.
Pulled one over
like,
on
like
him.
When, like, yeah, like when Ali G would interview.
Well, see,
somebody.
here's the really interesting thing, though, is that these guys are incredibly like schismatic and fractious, and so you know there are any number of conspiracy theorists who spend their entire time debunking other conspiracy theorists.
Right.
There is a whole dozens of YouTube channels which are all devoted to basically telling you that that David Icke is himself a tool of the Reptiloids, that he is a sort of like false flag psyop designed to discredit the very conspiracy which he espouses. So it is entirely possible that he was a willing participant in this movie, and that he did so for the very purpose of parodying the thing that he claims to represent.
Now, so in this movie, we brought it up, and now we've touched on this topic before on the show, but Bohemian Grove. Bohemian Grove is very – that's extremely my shit.
Dick, it's the faggiest thing I've ever seen.
Bohemian Grove is sort of a running joke on the show, but like we touched on it a little bit. But Jacob, like, what's the background with Bohemian Grove? Like, what do conspiracy theorists believe about Bohemian Grove? And like, I think we discussed briefly how it got started, but what's the story here?
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys did talk about it in a prior episode, and I think that I think it was Matt actually who described it, you know, very, very accurately. I mean, it originally began as a bunch of like theater and light opera types from like the Bay Area who went up and had a private retreat. Gradually, it ended up becoming a popular destination for a lot of like post Ivy League government types, captains of industry, and so forth and so on. And they all go up there and they have a jolly good time. They do a bunch of like weird queer shit, which is nothing that you wouldn't see at like an undergraduate theater party. And then they all go home. It's like Davos with bad sketch comedy.
Oh, it's like Bernie. So,
and hookers. Bernie, don't forget the hookers.
Yeah, well, yeah, right.
Like, where did this idea come from?
No. Well, so anyway, so, you know, but this has all been, turned into this sort of like notion that these guys go up there and this is actually like the secret place where they worship Moloch. They do rituals to a giant owl. It's like, you know, a Wicker Man, except there aren't any women. there are never any women in any of this stuff. And that these are the guys, like they are actually sort of like instantiating these sort of like Crowleyan, like satanic rituals, you know, as
like,
above,
yeah, this is, like,
so
this is the
below.
Idea that like the ruling class and like the elite of government and industry and entertainment or whatever, they get together to have a big private party where they just like openly worship the devil and perform sacrifices and, you know, I assume there's also a buffet.
Yeah, right. And that's the worst thing about the buffet is that you know that the buffet is just like fucking artisanal pizza with arugula on it. But everybody, you know, everybody's like, it's a cheese pizza, you know. So that's child pornography. I mean, this is the sort of sad thing. But also the fascinating thing about these sorts of conspiracy theories is that it's like the sort of banal reality of how these like monstrous humans are just fucking us like brutally every chance that they get is insufficiently operatic and like insufficiently magical for people. And so they have to imagine that like what, you know, that like it's not just all these assholes, like all these Silicon Valley assholes going to Trump Tower to kiss the ring of the guy, but that there's actually this like sort of hidden reality behind it, which is the real reason all of these bad things are happening. It can't simply be that like billionaires are assholes and they get together to be assholes together. It's got to be like billionaires are actually cannibalistic Satanists who get together to literally consume the spleens of children.
The millionaires and the billionaires, I want them to stop eating the children.
Look, I just think that they should eat male and female children equally.
Does Bohemian Grove still exist? Do they
still
do it?
Hell yeah!
Oh, yeah,
every
sure,
summer,
every year.
Does Trump go? Has he been?
Oh, hell no.
No, Trump is like, until now, Trump was just not nearly important enough and not nearly refined enough to get invited to that sort of thing. I mean, you know, like, can you imagine Trump at like the Aspen Ideas Festival? it's like the Aspen Ideas Festival crossed with like a bunch of guys who never quite got into Second City. I mean, it's real pathetic, really, when you think about it. It's like these are just like the lamest fucking people on earth. They just all have $1 billion, and so their opinion matters.
Well, we made the joke about it earlier about it, the faggiest goddamn thing I've ever seen, which is a real quote from the Nixon tapes about Richard Nixon talking about going to the Bohemian Grove. And
he wasn't a fan.
He was not a fan of it.
George H.W. Bush, though, big fan. He's been there a number of times.
Bill Clinton as well.
Yeah. Kissinger loved it as well. Yes, yeah.
Well, he loved the ballooning.
Yeah.
But now I'm imagining what would be like the equivalent of like the Trump administration tapes of him talking about being in the Bohemian Grove, whatever. It's like, they said it's a big owl on fire. It was stupid. I didn't get it.
The owl
is bad.
The owl is so. The owl. Why wasn't it gold? What?
But he definitely is going to get the invite now for sure.
Oh man.
Oh yeah.
They're going to have to scotch guard everything.
I mean, you know, everybody likes to imagine these people are like the secret masters of the universe, but secretly they all, you know, like they crave the same. They crave the same approval and approbation that everybody else does, and you know, assuming that all these like whiny ass Democrats who think that like Vladimir Putin is about to set up camp in the West Wing don't have their way, and Trump actually does become our next God Emperor, then sure they're going to extend the invite. And he's going to turn it down, but he'll send, like, which of the one son who looks like he's got fetal alcohol?
Eric.
I never remember which one. Eric, yeah, that's the one. And he'll send him out there in his place, you know. And the kid will get drunk and shoot somebody in the face with a shotgun. And, you know, it'll make a big splash in the Washington Post for one day. And then
I'm going to kill Mark Zuckerberg with a harpoon.
Is it – do they actually do gay stuff?
My answer to that question is I don't know if they do any actual homosexual stuff out there, but they do some real gay shit.
I mean like actual like sexual activity, because like at least someone has.
Right? I've heard that there's hookers.
Yeah,
like,
that's
that
what
they
keep
smuggle
hearing.
Hookers
bring in
into
like,
the tents and
they
stuff.
They just bring in like a stable of like high class escorts, and it's just like, yeah.
Like season 2 of True Detective shit, which was directly inspired by it.
But now, Brendan brought up the mockumentary about with David Icke was featured in. But have you seen the other mockumentary? I say mockumentary in scare quotes. The Alex Jones self-produced documentary.
He
about
actually
going,
did it.
Going to Bohemian Grove.
Oh yeah, no, that is fucking awesome. That is a person who has just like. At the end of, I'm convinced that Alex Jones is basically started out as a sort of like Michael Savage character. Like he sort of like constructed this this persona because he saw a niche that he could occupy. You know, particularly like in that era when some of the old like conspiracy theory stuff, like Coast to Coast, was kind of on the way out. AM radio was kind of like on the way out, and he really like saw a niche for himself in a way that he could really like monetize all of this stuff if only you know, he sort of like adopted the persona. And originally he basically was just a sort of like, you know, Turner Diaries, like survivalist militia, you know, government's coming for your guns kind of guy. He gradually sort of like got deeper and deeper into it, became more and more Christian. And I think that he ultimately like came to believe his own press releases. So now I think that he is totally a true believer. And I think that that like Bohemian Grove documentary that he did, where he like infiltrated it and filmed them like dancing around in their fucking Victorian nightshirts in front of this like giant like wicker owl and like
well, you say like he infiltrates them, and like my favorite part of that movie is like he infiltrates them by just dressing like a preppy guy, and he just like tucks in like a sort of a turquoise like polo shirt into khaki shorts. But there's another part where he interviews these like local kids about Bohemian Grove and what goes on there. And I first saw it, I didn't key into it, but now when I watch it again, it's so clear that the kids are just fucking high as shit. They're just incredibly stoned. Yeah, man, like it's all goes down there, we've seen it, you know?
Ain't nothing free, no guarantees, you know.
Okay, let's go ahead and go to Jack in New York. Says he disagrees. Go ahead, Jack.
Hey, Alex, how you doing?
Good.
Well, first of all, the reason why I disagree is because, you know, I think you're betraying America. I mean, you're blaming America for everything. I mean, you're saying, you know, the government's to blame for 9/11 and this, that, and the other thing. You know, I actually don't believe that.
See, you... I shouldn't be mean to you. Your mom didn't breastfeed you, did she?
Sir, what?
Did your mother breastfeed you?
What are you talking about?
Your brain, your brain will be about 25 to 30% smaller if your mother doesn't breastfeed you. You know, mammals feed their young a fatty substance filled with complex fats and sugars. It's called milk. And I mean, I'm not being mean. You're just retarded, sir. I mean, that's. I mean, as if your mother not breastfeeding you on top of it, you have a small brain. I'm not joking. This isn't funny. I mean, you know, people are laughing. It sounds like I'm being funny. I'm not. It's very sad. This young man's mother didn't breastfeed him. Bottom dollar. And he got fluoride. And everything else they put in there. I mean, he's got a tiny little brain. I got time to take one more, don't I? Let's go ahead and talk to somebody else that disagrees. See if they're retarded. Go ahead. You're on the air.
I mean, what it really is, and so I live in Pittsburgh, but I grew up in a small town outside of Pittsburgh, which was called Uniontown, Pennsylvania, and you know my family, my parents were sort of like part of the professional elite of this town, and everybody there, like all of the professionals, belonged to the country club. And the country club had like a subgroup, a social group, which was called the Question Club. And the Question Club was just a bunch of rich fucks who got together four times a year to have a party. But I remember, like, when I was in high school, there were people who actually believed that it was like this local, like, conspiracy of politicos and bigwigs. And, you know, and that's what happens when a bunch of professional get together like weirdos in some private social function is like the natural conclusion from that is that they are conspiring together to keep everybody else down. In reality, they're just like getting drunk and having a key party.
But people are just so inflamed. Their imaginations are so inflamed by the unknown, and like that's why if anybody wants to point to a external factor that might have done in Hillary Clinton, I think it was the email thing, but not specifically anything that she did wrong. It was the refrain 30,000 deleted emails, because that could have been anything. Anything could have been in there. Vince Foster.
The breeding program.
Pizzagate. The breeding program. Mena Airport. Bringing in the Yayo, you know. And so you can make that into anything, whereas like the banal reality of like the DNC stuff of like, well, Bernie, we're going to give her the – I mean that's the reality that these people don't want to like acknowledge because it's just too crushingly banal, whereas that black hole, that curtain –
Well, that's what conspiracy, you know, there are two competing impulses, I think, that really lead to conspiratorial thinking. I mean, one of them is just, you know, this sort of sense that there is so much information and complexity in the world that history and politics, that even one's own personal economic status are influenced by so many incredibly like disparate and often truly random and unrelated factors, that the only way to make sense of it all is to sort of shoehorn it all into this totalizing narrative, which accounts for everything. It accounts for random chance. It accounts for the fact that, you know, James Comey sent a note to Congress 1 week later than he should have in order for Clinton to still eke it out. You know, all of these things have to be accounted for in these conspiracy narratives. But the interesting corollary or inverse of that is that they also represent a failure or an inability to believe that things are sometimes simple. Like, I mean, I whether it's literally true or not, this is why I think it's like so great to just like continually harp on the notion that like Bernie would have won. It's like at the end of the day, the truth of the matter is that like Hillary Clinton lost because she didn't campaign in Michigan. You know, it really is that simple. But people don't want to believe that either. And that if you look on the sort of like liberal side of the coin, that really is what leads to people believing that there is, you know, like an elaborate conspiracy, you know, to hack and throw the election. I mean, that was just like one minor part of many. So, you know, people can neither accept like simplicity of explanation nor the sort of like complexity of the whole texture of the world. And so in both cases, they tend to seek out these sort of like narrative accountings for a reality which is just like sort of crushing for a lot of people.
And what's so interesting,
impossible to understand.
What's so interesting about that is that conspiracy narratives for a long time were sort of the province of the sort of the fringes of political ideologies and thinking. And in both parties now, in the both main currents of American politics, they have moved steadily to the center, where now we have a situation where there's two political parties with mass base of voters, who both of those voting bases are in the grip of just baroque, insane conspiracy theories. The kind of stuff that like even 10 years ago would be the province of the internet, you know, malcontents. And I wonder, is that because just like the complexity that you're talking about is becoming so overwhelming that even people who are in the very centers of these political and economic systems are becoming just sort of cowed by it and retreating into a narrative to make sense of it in the face of their just dawning realization of their powerlessness over these forces?
Well, I mean, I think that what it really is, you know, when you look back at the fringes and when you talk about the people, like you talk about the sort of internet malcontents of, you know, 10 or 20 years ago. And I think that what you find is that like a lot of the people who really became involved in this sort of thing, and I sort of count myself among them. I mean, I was never really a true believer, but I was certainly like really, really into this shit, you know, in my adolescence and into my early 20s.
You write about it in a really great piece for the New Republic this year called I Was a Teenage Nazi Wannabe. And you talk about this kind of like this weird ideology you cobbled together for yourself. I think in your words, using over-the-counter disassociatives and like the Turner Diaries.
No, right, yeah. You watch a bunch of Indiana Jones movies. You get a hold of the Turner Diaries and a couple pages of the Anarchist Cookbook. You chat with some weirdos on MIRC and you drink two bottles of Robitussin DM and all of a sudden the idea that we're ruled by interdimensional reptiloids begins to seem fairly reasonable and normal, or the idea that like there needs to be some sort of a Third Reich, Fourth Reich political revolution begins to seem not that crazy. But you know, a lot of the people who became involved in that, like I was, are people who were sort of like on the social fringes in their adolescence, are people who were like extremely sensitive, people who liked books and liked reading and liked science fiction and who had a sort of like weird or alternative politics. And this was a something for people who were sort of like exceptionally sensitive, perhaps even oversensitive to the world around them, to channel their intellectual and emotional energies. And I think that what's happened is that, you know, the world has just gotten more complicated and worse for a lot of people. So people who may have been desensitized to those sorts of impulses 15 or 20 years ago are now just becoming increasingly sensitized to it simply because of the fact that things seem so much beyond their control in the way that as an adolescent, things seem to be beyond your control. You have no control over your economic fortunes. You cannot decide where to go. You can't make determinations or decisions for your family. The modest political autonomy that you have is so small, so slim, so constrained by your own lived circumstances that it appears to be non-existent. And then so once you begin living in those circumstances, you begin theorizing that there is this sort of like secret force beyond your control, which is responsible for the events that you are experiencing in your life. Because what else could it be? What else could make you so powerless and so alienated from the world in which you
capitalism?
Live?
And that's my point, is that, you know, people don't have an ideology to guide them and help explicate very, very complicated things.
Yeah, because like it's so frustrating reading a lot of these things, because when you see the master narrative and you see the way that these people frame the way the world works, and the spot where there's Moloch or Satan or the reptoids, it could just be capitalism. And it's like that would be so much closer to the truth.
I think another aspect of this is that when you replace the legitimate categories and analyses that Matt just described with all the wacky stuff, the conspiracy theorist feels like he's doing work and feels like he's getting a lot done by being an internet detective and by just unraveling more and discovering more.
Posting,
making more connections, you know, like uncovering stuff is to them, because they feel powerless, suddenly equivalent with like activism or work or organization or actual heroism, when the much harder, banal work of just going out, getting political, doing a lot of the stuff that we've discussed is going to happen over the next 4 years. And I guess that's what I'm driving at, is that I think a lot of the libs who are now resorting to the Russia thing, they're lazy. They don't want to have to think about, okay, we need to radically restructure stuff. We need to radically mobilize. For them, it's like, I'd rather post. And that's what a conspiracy
like everybody
theorist
on,
is
yeah, everybody
to.
Online. Like, I'd rather post. And yeah. Everyone's online.
But it feels like you're doing work.
Yeah.
I also think the libs psychologically can't handle the concept that they've been repudiated, that they themselves and this totemic figure that they love.
Well, that's what T said
hated.
Last time.
Yeah,
with that book.
Yeah, when prophecy fails.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Well, so like
connecting the dots already.
Okay, let's get the cork board out here.
All right, Ron Fournier.
I've got Ron Fournier.
The baseball crank. Yeah. Look at this stitch.
No, all of these people are basically they're Linda Litsky. In Burn After Reading. All right?
Yeah.
It's Frances McDormand's character in Burn After Reading, and it's when all like the shit has hit the fan, and Chad is missing, and she's about to get fired from her job.
I hate your negativity. I hate your reasons why not.
She says, just give me 24 hours to solve this thing, Ted.
Yeah.
And that's really it. It's these sort of like you know, helpless doofuses, you know, stuck in a dead end job, like without, you know, with no politics that can guide them, no intellectual framework which can help them and understand, you know, in understanding why these things are happening. You know, like you said, Matt, you know, no capitalism as a totemic word, you know, to give them a system that sort of explicates by and large what's going on in their lives. And so, you know, what they substitute is sort of amateur detective work. Like, I'm going to squirrel my way somehow into this power. I'm going to crack this case wide open. Once I crack the case wide open, then it's going to rebound to my own, like, personal and material benefit.
Well, you bring up the internet detective work, right? And, like, we've talked about, like, this the Russia House conspiracy, the libs, who, you know, lost. So I think they have like there's some psychological reason there that they're trying to protect themselves from facing reality. What's more interesting for me now is on the right, the Pizzagate thing, the Pizzagaters.
It's certainly funnier.
I wanted to get into
Pizzagate,
this now.
Pizzagate is objectively hilarious.
Okay, they won, but like the Pizzagate has gotten twice as powerful. Yeah. Now.
Well, my theory behind that is that as soon as like, because the Trump presidency was always at some level of fantasy,
right?
And as soon as he got in, on some level the realization had to come that they were going to be brutally disappointed.
Yeah,
nothing was going to change. This was always something that they had invested in as a dream.
Plus it's going to be boring.
It's going to be boring, it's going to be disappointing. Where, and so immediately the leap is, okay, I don't want to listen. I don't want to dwell on the fact that there's 15 Goldman Sachs, you know, executives in the cabinet now. And he said he's not going to build a wall or whatever. They're fucking eating children.
Well, like, that's kind of the meta conversation. But can we narrate how we got to John Podesta is the Yellow King?
Yeah.
Because that to me is more interesting. Like, so, yeah, so, so what, how did this start? Like, what was the Pizzagate genesis?
No, I mean it starts. So it starts in the WikiLeaks dump. Everybody, I'm sure, who listens to the show already knows this, but WikiLeaks releases these emails. They're John Podesta's hacked emails. So it's basically like all of the internal emails from the Clinton campaign. All of this because John Podesta is like a 70-year-old. He's like your grandma. And someone offered him a free TV, and he clicked on the link. He was like, he clicked on the Cialis link, and here we are. Donald Trump is the president. You know, like I said, sometimes shit really is that simple. It's like a very straightforward.
It was reported the other day by another consultant on the campaign who said, I saw that John asked me about this link, and I said, that's a legitimate link. But then he said, that was a typo. I meant to write illegitimate.
Oh, man.
Hey, if it's a legitimate link, the internet has a way of shutting those kind of things down.
Nobody's nerfed.
Right. Yeah. So WikiLeaks gets a hold of like this trove of emails from John Podesta, who is like, big wig in Hillary's inner circle in the Democratic Party. So, but like, where does it go from there? It's the code words. Like, how did that get started?
Yeah, no. So the Podestas are the first thing you have to know about them is that the Podestas are rich. I mean, these guys have been scamming Democrats out of millions of dollars for like the last 30 years, John Podesta's brother is also like a fairly well known art collector. So one portion of these emails has to do with their relationship with Marina Abramović, who's like a well known performance artist who incorporates various like elements of ritual Satanism into her work. But it's even more banal than that because that's off to the side. Everybody knows that's happening. Everybody's seen these emails where they talk about like doing spirit cooking, which is and all of these other kind of like weird rich people art things. Meanwhile, John Podesta goes to a fundraiser at Comet Pizza, which is a pizza and event space outside of Washington, D.C., whose owner has supported Democrats and Democratic politics for a long time. He leaves behind a handkerchief, someone sends him an email about this, like, hey, you left this handkerchief behind, and the internet sleuths are fucking on it.
This is all very Curb Your Enthusiasm kind of thing. Like Larry leaves a handkerchief,
Susie's like, get another fucking handkerchief. What's wrong with you?
It's my handkerchief. It's mine.
Well, as a homosexual, and you got to insert the trademark out of that, as a homosexual, I can tell you that handkerchiefs featured prominently in '60s through the '80s in particular.
I was going to say, Brendan, can we edit in? Like can we edit in right now the scene from Cruising where Powers Booth tells Al Pacino with all the different handkerchiefs in?
Yeah.
Excuse me. Can I ask you about these?
What about them?
What are they for?
Well, like blue hank in your left back pocket means you want a blowjob. Right pocket means you give one. Green one left side says you're a hustler, right side you're a buyer. The yellow one left side means you give golden shower, right side you receive. Red one means you see anything you want.
I'm gonna go home and think about it.
Sure, you'll make the right choice.
Yeah, right, exactly. You wear a black handkerchief in like your back right hand pocket, and that means you're like a piss pig dungeon slave. And you wear like a blue one in your left pocket, folded in a certain way, and that just means I'm with her. Right, so the internet sleuths latch onto this, and they're like, it's like pizza. All right. And then it's handkerchiefs, and then it's Democrats, and then it's this Democrat who was involved in this contemporary performance art bullshit that involves spirit cooking, which has its roots in rituals that were promulgated by notable Satanist Aleister Crowley. So as I kind of was saying before, you take all of these disparate elements and you do a little spirit cooking of your own. And the concoction that comes out is a sort of through-line narrative in which Comet Pizza, this place, is a sort of like a modern McMartin daycare. It is a sort of like nexus for the satanic pedophilic trade in children amongst the elites, and particularly the sort of atheistic left-wing elites of this country. And then once you've sort of established that narrative, it becomes totalizing. All other information feeds into that narrative. Mm-hmm. The logo of this
yes, the triangle, right?
Yeah, the logo. One of the logos looks like is like a triangle. I mean, it's a fucking slice of pizza, but it's like, oh, that's, like you know. That's
wait a minute. Why would you want a triangle in your pizza logo?
Jacob, the thing I saw is that the logo for Comet Pizza, according to the internet, is eerily similar to the logo for pedophilia. I didn't know they had a logo.
Yeah, famous pedophile logo. Put this in your brand if you're a pedophile, so we all know.
Well, actually, if you look at the Comet Pizza logo, so it sort of says Comet, and then on either side, it's got these sort of little chevrons, which it looked at it in a certain way. It could be interpreted as sort of like a half moon, and then within the chevron is a little five-pointed star. So that very much resembles a symbol which you see on common depictions of the Baphomet, the sort of goat-headed demon Baphomet, which is also common in conspiracy theories. You know, so again, I mean, you know, it's also present in such like noted, like actually satanic symbols as the state flag of South Carolina. But, you know, there's no reason why we can't admit that to the conspiracy as well. So so the internet sleuths discover this. It hits 4chan. It hits Reddit, particularly the very popular Trump forum on Reddit. Starts to be promulgated throughout the sort of like conspiracy web. In particular, it's actually promulgated on a number of sites which are linked to a guy named Sean Adil Tabatabi, who was a like sort of documentarian and videographer, who was actually David Icke's media producer in the early days.
Wheels within wheels.
Also, as far as I can tell, a sort of Milo Yabba Dabba Duopolis type, because he is a gay British guy married to some L.A. twink who now lives out in L.A. and produces right-wing conspiracy stuff. And then from that point, it just explodes into the popular culture. It hits all of the like sort of like Trumpistas. It gets pushed out onto Facebook. Here we are today. With probably, I mean, I wouldn't doubt that there are millions of people in this country who think that Pizzagate is a real very serious thing to be investigated.
What's so interesting for me is that it, like, what they latch onto, I've seen it over and over again, are two things. One of them is they say, those emails, that's weird sounding. That's weird sounding. And, like, the only thing they can process is it has to be code, as opposed to if you get a decontextualized email where people are referring to things outside of your knowledge because they both know them, so they wouldn't. People are used to like the way people talk in movies where they say, as you know, and then say all the right stuff that they both would know, when in reality they would not say that because they already know it. And so decontextualized stuff looks weird to people, yeah, like map. A pizza-related map handkerchief? That has to be a code for something. So, like, they make that leap, which is a huge... And then the really funny leap is that then they take that code list, the pizza equals child, you know, walnuts equal person of color or whatever, and then they say, well, this is a real... Like, this is a thing. Like, that's an actual key. Instead of something that someone literally just made and put on the internet. Yeah. Like, it. That's how... Like, that's what's... I mean, genuinely is... distorting and revolutionary about the internet is because like
let me kind of take this back to like the banal world of politics for a minute, because and this really plays into what happened in the election that like liberals in particular just like do not want to face up to, which is the sort of like yawning perceptual gulf between the sort of like educated and professionally successful upper classes and then all of the other people out there. So it's like, you know, for me, so I'm like an overly educated, like well-heeled homosexual working in a university, previously having worked in like nonprofits and the arts. Like, I'm friends with people who are like contemporary art curators. So to me, like that Marina Abramovich stuff, like all that spirit cooking nonsense, like is just like funny. It's just like, oh, that's like bad contemporary of art of the sort that I satirized in my first novel. The fact that I can say I satirized something in my first novel should fucking like where I'm
I actually remember
from.
That the performance artist in the Bend of the World scene is some Nazi like clown. He's like making fun of the Third Reich or something, and he's like,
yeah, he actually is a fake Nazi. So you know, so to me, you know, or to like you guys, you look at that stuff and you think like, it's funny, and it's just like these like well-heeled and overcompensated idiots engaging in, you know, in a bunch of like their version of like a frat party hazing, like just a bunch of nonsense. Like they're having this famous artist come over to pretend to do a like ooga booga ritual for them, and that's all art, and then they can all go home like feeling like their own personal Matthew Barney. But if you have no contact with that world and no experience with that world, and like you're just trying to like make a living and get by, and like, you know, Thomas Kincaid is your idea of what is really great art in this world, then you read stuff like that and it legitimately does seem
John,
fucking weird and creepy.
John Podesta does have a sculpture in his house that was inspired by a crime scene photo from Jeffrey Dahmer's apartment. It's a body that's posed in the exact same spot, a position as a body that was found in Jeffrey Dahmer's house. And it's in his fucking house. And like, you look at that and you roll your eyes like, you're a fucking edgelord, John Podesta. Give it a fucking break.
Right.
But yeah, if you don't have any context for that, you're like, what kind of psychopath would you have to be to have something like that in your house? And it's a decent question. Yeah. If you don't have like all this cultural context, it's like, well, it's going to be a few steps before I can get you there. You see, there's a modern art movement. I mean, good luck.
Like when we took my bar owner grandfather before he passed away, like years ago, when the Andy Warhol Museum opened in Pittsburgh, you know, which is full of like photos of like electric chairs and car crashes and like Mick Jagger made up like a woman, you know. So we take him there and we like force him to like walk through, you know, like a dutiful museum goer, and then, you know, he grumbles the whole way we leave. And afterward, you know, he sort of said, yeah, I didn't like that one bit. And one of us sort of solicitously, you know, asked him, well, you know, didn't you like anything about it at all, Fritz? His name was Fritz. Didn't you like anything about it at all, Fritz? And he said, yeah, I like fucking leaving the place. That's how people feel about this shit. They're like, they think it's weird. It's like unsettling. It's unusual. And so when they see people who are like in the echelons of power, and particularly people who represent a sort of this sort of like managerial liberalism that they really, really distrust because it hasn't done anything to better their lives, at least that they can appreciate, then, you know, naturally they think like these people aren't just they're not just weirdos. They're not just idiosyncratic rich people. They're actually like malevolent and evil.
Well, that's where another time it gets to this frustrating orthogonal relationship with reality where like, they do not care about regular people. They do view you as a commodity, essentially. They would not care if you were dissolved into nutrient paste. You know, but and then that truth gets transmitted into a fantasy narrative that they can control and
similar
be empowered by.
Similar to Bohemian Grove and the reptiles and the breeding program, and this is in MK Ultra things as well. Like it does, like the common denominator does seem to be this idea of like there's sort of like the secret twisted pleasures of elites. And then I guess the PZ had the idea of like pedophilia or whatever, of some like organized network of pedophiles at like the highest levels of power, which is like, you know, well, what we know now about like Thatcher's inner circle during her government is pretty frightening. I mean, I don't know if it's like Pizzagate level, but it's like almost there.
Well, that's the other thing is that, you know, like there are, as in all of these, in any conspiracy, there are elements of sort of base banal reality in it, and you're exactly right. You look at what happened in England over the last 50 years, or what's happened in the Catholic Church over the last over centuries. Like, let's not just say over the last several decades.
Yeah,
like,
no. It was by the way, it was the liberal priests.
Yep,
it happened in the 60s. It was the liberal priests who did all this.
You guys are talking about Vatican II, right?
Vatican.
I think it's a damn scandal.
Vatican Jew.
You give up the Latin Mass. You start playing guitars, and all of a sudden, you're fucking children. there is this sort of like basal reality in which these things actually do happen, and so it's very easy, you know, once again, to sort of extrapolate from that and say, you know, well, you know, if it happened with a bunch of like rich House of Lords fucks in Thatcherite England, then who's to say that it's not happening now? Who's to say that John Podesta isn't like dressing up in his furry suit and like sodomizing kidnapped 8-year-old girls in the basement of a pizza parlor?
But he's dressed up like Chuck E. Cheese.
Charles Entertainment Cheese is his full name, by the way.
I mean, it's like Hillary Clinton said in one of those Goldman Sachs speeches, you know, you have one policy towards children in public, you have another policy towards children in
public. But here's another case where, like, once again, even when reality is as bad as the worst imaginings of a conspiracy theorist, the way that the House of Lords was filled with pederasts in the 80s, it was still way more banal than Pizzagate. There were codes. There was no secret logos in restaurants and tunnels. It was just a bunch of perverted old fucks getting at-risk kids to come to their house.
I just
a good friend of mine actually joined the Freemasons, and actually this is a funny story, because this was right after out of college, and he was a gallery attendant at the Andy Warhol Museum, and actually one of the kind of more blue collar guys there, who was this kind of weirdo sex pervert security guard, asked him if he wanted to join the Freemasons, and he was a buddy of mine, and we were both really into, you know, secret societies and conspiracy theories. So he joins the Freemasons, and he was so incredibly disappointed, because all it was like guys forwarding like shitty, like semi-pornographic email jokes and organizing spaghetti dinners. Like, that was it.
It's like the Stonecutters.
Tonight, we're having ribs.
Is it possible to, spitballing here, is it possible to sell Marxism to people by saying it's a conspiracy theory? Like,
well, a lot of conspiracy theories.
There's a cabal that controls all world events. And for every tendency, there's an opposite tendency. I'm telling you.
There's a specter haunting all of us. Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing is,
it's
Marx...
It's a real ghost.
Marx actually did traffic a little bit in conspiracies. He was convinced when he was in London that the Prime Minister, Lord Palmerston, was in the pay of the Tsar. Nice. He was absolutely convinced
of it. That's like today.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly like
it was like Putin shit. It was like Putin shit.
But it is the same thing as the Putin stuff right now.
Well, I'll actually put in a plug for a really fantastic non-conspiracy narrative, which I always tell people is like one of the great and underappreciated comic novels and maybe the truest political novel ever written, which is Joseph Conrad's The Secret Agent.
A book's great.
I love a great one.
It's an incredible book, and it basically tells the story of actually though it's never named, it's basically a Russian conspiracy to suborn an act of terrorism in Great Britain in order to turn the British political classes away from their sort of like fuddy-duddy liberalism and toward a more responsible authoritarianism. And if you read it now, you know, it touches on Marxism and anarchism as sort of countervailing forces in the early 20th century or the late 19th century, I guess. It touches upon this sort of like very like classic liberal notion that like science is the one thing that must not and cannot be attacked. It touches on sort of like the Russian conspiracy and more than anything else, though, you know, it really sort of like gets at this notion that like the sort of like actual conspiracies that happen are much more banal and straightforward than
however,
we imagine.
I mean, however, really, Jacob, the false flag terror attack in The Secret Agent does involve taking advantage of a disabled and underprivileged child.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he sends his intellectually disabled stepson to blow up a bomb at Greenwich Observatory, and shit goes south. No spoilers, but shit goes south.
Greenwich Observatory, that's where they calibrate the time, right?
Yes.
So
exactly.
He's going to blow up time. That is fucking brilliant.
Yeah. Well, no, they say, you know, people do not care. People don't care about casualties anymore. They've seen casualties. This is, it's really fascinating in our, in the sort of post 9/11 world. So, you know, people have seen, they've seen casualties. They've seen mass casualty events. They've seen terrible wars. Nobody cares like about like body parts in the streets like that. That doesn't affect anybody anymore. And nobody cares about politics, but people do believe in science and technology and progress. And that is what we are going to attack, because that is what will seem to the sort of like common people as being like the most senseless and destructive thing at all of all. And that's a really like a fascinating observation that I think at least on the liberal side of the spectrum these days holds very true.
We've gone on a while, but before we go, I do want to ask you about one more conspiracy theory, because I'm aware of it, but I don't actually know the particulars of it. And I'm hoping that you can educate me on it. The Denver International Airport. What is going on there?
The place
is fucked up, dude.
Okay, because it involves this, their weird public art installations. The fact that Denver doesn't actually need an international airport, and there's this like massive construction project. As best I can understand it, people believe that there's this huge like underground network or like bunkers that like the elite are. It's going to be sort of like a life raft for them when the apocalypse happens. Is that it?
Yeah, I would encourage people to just Google like Denver International Airport public art, and you'll find all sorts of like vigilant citizen type postings in which the sort of like esoteric and occult significance of all of the weird murals there, and they are weird fucking murals. Like there is no getting around the fact that there is some very strange public art in that airport.
Somebody got a little Diego Rivera carried away with that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, if you did a bunch of like ayahuasca and then attempted to recreate like a Works Progress Administration on the side of a federal building, you'd end up with something like this. It's like the Tennessee Valley Authority meets Guernica. Really fucking weird.
And isn't like the building like the runway or like the roads leading up to or something are like in some sort of occult shape if viewed from the the sky or something like
that.
Yeah,
there's a whole element that the runways form this sort of sacred or satanic geometry, which actually ironically is also a popular conspiracy about our nation's capital.
Oh, about DC, right? It's based on a pentagram, right?
And in fact, I'm sorry to digress back to Pizzagate. This is another really interesting thing. So during the sort of like during the underground sleuthing, the internet sleuthing for Pizzagate, they accidentally happened upon this photo of a man who they thought was the owner of Comet Pizza, but he's actually the owner of a place called L'Enfant Café in Washington, D.C.
Oh, yeah, that was so funny. He had a shirt that said, I heart LaFont.
That's
the kind of thing where
dude is wearing a shirt, and the shirt says, J'aime, in French, I love, j'aime l'enfant. I love children.
J'aime, what could this be code for?
So that's the kind of thing that's self-refuting.
Actually, the guy's wearing a shirt, and it refers to his cafe, the L'Enfant Café, and it's named after Charles-Pierre L'Enfant, who was the French-American architect and Revolutionary War soldier who actually laid out the street plan for Washington, D.C., a street plan which, again, I would encourage you, as Donald Trump would say, you know, just like Google it, and you will find that there is an elaborate conspiracy theory that the Baphomet is represented in the street grid of Washington, D.C.
All those guys were Freemasons, all of them.
Yes, Freemasons.
What happens if you go into Comet Pizza and you just want a pizza? Like, you're not a pedophile and you ask them for a pizza. It just doesn't make sense that
you
got to
pay 20% extra.
You're using code words. Like, the pizza place is a front, but all the code words are related to the front. It's like if there's a Yakuza front, that's a sushi place, and like tuna is code for contract killing. You know, that's not how a front works.
Back to the Denver airport, though, is the idea that there's some massive underground facility underneath the airport?
Yeah, and this is a common trope in a lot of conspiracy theories. Actually, you find it in the Comet Pizza thing. You found it in the old McMartin day school stuff and the original sort of satanic panic back in the 80s, which is the notion that there are some type of subterranean facilities, and they tend to serve one of two purposes. Either they are rape and kill rooms. You may recall those served a very important purpose during another conspiracy, which was the actual conspiracy to get America to invade Iraq. When everybody talked about
the rape rooms,
rape and kill rooms in Iraq, so it's a common trope in all sorts of conspiratorial thinking, it either serves that purpose or else it serves the purpose as being a sort of strange Lovian, like underground last resort for the elites. So you know, after they provoke a nuclear war to cleanse the earth, they themselves are to be the phoenix that arises from the ashes, they go and hide underneath Denver Airport. And this is, of course, only supported further by the fact that the Denver Airport, if you've ever been there, actually does have a very extensive underground, like a light rail transit system to get you from terminal to terminal to terminal. And so, you know, if you actually like start investigating it, there are elaborate underground passages there. Of course, they're just for tram cars to move through. But again, you can see how that just plays into the sort of like totalizing nature of that conspiracy. It's like, well, it can't just be for the light rail to get you from terminal to terminal to terminal. It must be for this additional other cause as well, in this case, to survive the end times and arise with a new world order.
Before we go, Jacob, let's plug your books. Or, like, as I refer to them, the Menaker Baccarat collection.
I know, we should do a box set.
Yeah, absolutely. But your first novel, The Bend of the World. If you liked hearing Jacob on the show talk about conspiracies, he wrote a whole novel that is a hilarious coming of age story all about conspiracy theories. It's The Bend of the World.
An anti coming of age story.
Yeah, yeah. A nobody comes of age story. But yeah, that was your first book, and you got a second one coming out in 2017.
Yeah, I have a new novel coming out in March of 2017. It's called On the Doorposts of Your House and on Your Gates. For all you Jews out there, you'll recognize that. For all you Goy, you'll just have to wait and read the epigram.
No, explain it to me. Is it like hobo code?
It is. It's true. It's it is by one of our great poets, John Kasich, it refers to the way that you know which boxcar will be friendly to sleep in any given rail yard.
Very important for Jews to know this.
Yes,
that's Kabbalic wisdom.
Your new book is about globalism, right?
It is. It is. It is. I am shamelessly pitching it as the first and best and only novel for the age of Trump. It is about a bunch of shitty real estate speculators moving out to the Rust Belt, Western Pennsylvania, in order to get rich and hopefully not incur the wrath of God. It is loosely based on the story of Abraham and Isaac from the Old Testament. You may remember that one, but it is full of at least three characters who could easily be fictive stand-ins for your president and mine. Sorry, haters and losers, Donald Trump.
All right. Well, we'll link to those. Jacob, if you were here, I'd give you the secret handshake, but thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, come to the pizza party next time.
Oh, and next time I'm in New York, we're definitely going to eat some of those real New York slices. Yes.
Famous original. Wink. Cheers, Jacob. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Rugged up the scary lead blunted. Give me anxiety like Repo Man coming. Oz Man coming. The world finna plummet. Demons in my dick, let them breathe in your stomach. Antoine on your shit list. I'm the best bitch. Still get Christmas gifts from all of my exes.
I caught these two guys with 3 kilos of cocaine. What do you think they were doing with a making shark for girls' softball games? I caught these two guys with 3 kilos of cocaine. What do you think they were doing with a making shark for girls' softball games? I caught these two guys with 3 kilos of cocaine. What do you think they were doing with a making shark for girls' softball games? I caught these two guys.